Hello and welcome back to Talking Europe. Well, as the EU institutions get back to work after the summer break, it's likely to be a delicate few months for the Union. EU leaders are nervously watching what happens in the US election. In Ukraine, parts of the front line are under great pressure. Trade tensions with China have spiked. Viktor Orbán, the Hungarian premier, holds the rotating EU presidency. And there's also a bit of a limbo as designated EU commissioners have yet to go up before the European Parliament for their hearings. Well, my guest today is one of France's foremost economists and a noted political commentator. Jean Pisani-Ferry is a senior fellow at Bruegel, the European think tank, and a non-resident senior fellow at the Peterson Institute in Washington, D.C. He's also professor of economics here in Paris at Sciences Po University. Thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you.
Let's start with the news here in France. Michel Barnier, a former EU commissioner and Brexit negotiator, has been nominated French prime minister. What do you think of this choice?
Depends of your standpoint. I mean, from a French standpoint, it's a surprise. And it's a delicate gamble because Barnier doesn't have the support of a majority in parliament. And he's been appointed with the promise of the National Rally not to introduce a vote of no confidence immediately. So he's in a precarious situation. Yeah. And obviously the left is absolutely furious.
Because, of course, it had the largest number of seats after the election.
Yes, and so Barnier is from a party that has had 50 seats in parliament. From a European standpoint, it's different. I think, you know, there must be a relief in the European capital in Brussels because Barnier is known. Barnier is, knows Europe. Barnier is pro-European. He's experienced. In this regard, it's a sort of element of stability that's provided by this choice.
We'll come back to stability, but one thing that is, in a way, a blemish on his very pro-European CV is when he was campaigning to be the leader of Les Républicains, the Conservative Party. He talked about France shouldn't submit to the European Court of Human Rights. He talked very kind of Brexity language on immigration. That doesn't really seem to have been a factor when you look at the reactions from Brussels.
He was probably forgiven for having, used this language in an electoral campaign.
Yeah. On the stability question, as you are an economist, of course, as I said in my introduction, and France's public deficit is now forecast to reach 4.6% of GDP this year, potentially. How did we get to this point, and what can Barnier or anybody do about this now?
We got to this point because of a series of crises in which fiscal policy was used, to provide to cushion the shock. But more fundamentally, for structural reasons, which is that there was not much effort under Macron to rein in public spending. And there was a total taboo on increasing taxes. And there were actually lowering of taxes. So the bet was that this would eventually balance through a higher level of activity, a higher level of potential GDP, and therefore this would generate revenues. This bet has failed, and now Barnier is facing a major adjustment.
So you're saying the bet was that businesses would become more productive, for example, after the COVID recovery.
Actually, they became less. The level of productivity is down compared to the previous pre-COVID trend down some 5 percentage points, which is huge.
So is Michel Barnier kind of fool guy for unpopular but inevitable measures that will now have to happen,
I'm afraid, for example,
like tax increases?
I'm afraid so. I think that for him, the first priority will be to define a path to, you know, of budgetary adjustment and to define what the strategy for adjusting the responding to the existing imbalance.
Yeah, but with this very fragile situation in the French Parliament that you mentioned, is there any room for any major sort of economic policies to balance the budget, or is that again unrealistic given this limbo, political limbo that we're in now?
I think we can't afford to just to navigate with a very short-term perspective. You know, the government has to tackle the issues that are there on the table.
Yeah.
Otherwise, not only the EU will object, but markets will object.
Yeah. Of course, France isn't the only country that is having this political turbulence. We saw a victory for the far right in Germany, in Thuringia, in the regional election, and it came a very close second in Saxony as well. Olaf Scholz, the German chancellor, is under a lot of pressure now. What do you think this all means for the Franco-German motor, as it used to be called, of European integration? Is that really over now?
It may not be over, but the motor is clearly not functioning at full speed. Mm. You know, on both sides, you have a significant lack of leadership. Mm. You have a lack of support domestically that necessarily will impact on the initiatives that can be taken on the European scene. So that's a first in a way, because each time one of the two partners was weaker, the other one was stronger. Now they're weak at the same time. And yeah. So the big challenge, it's a major challenge for the institutions. Can they live without the sort of the Franco-German motor?
You said in a position paper that perhaps Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the European Commission, might be able to fill that void if Macron and Scholz can't do very much. I'm guessing a lot of EU leaders will not like that idea.
They may not like that idea, but you know, the EU is facing absolutely major challenges, and it will be receiving a report by Mario Draghi, which no doubt will be very dark in the picture it draws of the economic situation in Europe, and rightly so. And Draghi will propose measures such as, you know, strengthening the single market, such as making sure that companies can grow because they get access to finance on European scale. So we don't know exactly what he will propose, but no doubt he will paint a very dark picture of the situation. Mm. And on top of what we know, which is the war in Ukraine, which is the challenge of the energy transition, and which is the uncertainty in the US. So all that means action needs to be taken.
Yeah, and you also have a call to action in your latest report from the Bruegel Institute. I'll just show that for our viewers. It's called Unite, Defend, Grow, Memos to the EU Leadership 2024-2029. So in reference to this new EU mandate, the five-year mandate, which is just starting. But Jean-Pierre Ferry, you yourself have admitted that the EU only really takes bold action in times of crisis. Otherwise, it's not forced to act. Do you feel that the EU is feeling that pressure now, that heat, or it's just going to sort of see what happens and inertia will come back?
It would be, if inertia comes back, it would be really detrimental to the future of the EU. I mean, the EU has, you know, the EU is legitimate because it produces output. I mean, the political scientists oppose, you know, process legitimacy and output legitimacy. The EU is very much on the side of output legitimacy. So the question is, what the EU will deliver?
One final point. You've said that on the question of immigration, and this obviously linked to what's just happened in Germany politically, you've said that in response to Europe's demographic challenges, it's important to integrate non-communitarian foreigners, as you called them. What do you mean by that? What do you mean by non-communitarian, and what is this integration that you're talking about?
I think all, you know, virtually all our countries suffer from the same illness. I mean, the demographic dynamism is not there. So there's a need to balance, to ensure there's a better balance between people at work and people out of work. And people at work, they must be coming from outside. So it's a challenge for the society. It's a challenge to accept first the fact that, you know, our societies are becoming more diverse. But it's also a challenge to ensure that the foreigners who come, you know, we have foreign doctors. I just heard on the radio this morning that doctors from Africa are coming and to a small village or a small town and will be providing medical services. This is part of the new landscape, and it has to be accepted, and it has to be taking place in a welcoming society.
So skilled immigration, then. We should leave it there for now, but hopefully we'll continue this conversation in other programs. Jean Pisani-Ferry, thank you so much for being my guest. So Jean Pisani-Ferry of the Bruegel Institute, and that's all for this part of Talking Europe.